Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to the Scribe Bud with Janae, the podcast that takes you on a thrilling journey through the enchanting world of books and the art of writing. I'm your host, Janae, and I'm absolutely delighted to have you join me on this exciting adventure. Guess what? I've rebranded! And with this new, I've added a segment to my podcast called The Writer's Talk. This video recorded segment will take you on an exciting journey of the featured artists. You'll learn more about their work and we'll dive deep into their writing world. The video is always ready to be viewed on my channel, Janae Writes Books, which is on YouTube the day after the podcast airs. Also, in each episode, we will go in depth into the captivating realm of literature, exploring the countless facets that make writing such a fascinating and rewarding craft. From the intricate process of crafting compelling characters to the secrets of weaving intricate plot lines, we'll unravel the mysteries of storytelling together. And that's not all. We'll also keep our finger on the pulse of the ever-evolving publishing industry, discussing the latest trends, the most groundbreaking authors, and the books that are making waves on the literary scene. Whether you're an aspiring writer eager to hone your skills, a passionate bookworm always on the hunt for your next favorite read, or simply one who appreciates the timeless magic of a well-told story, this podcast is tailor-made for you. So grab your favorite beverage, find a cozy spot, and let's embark on this exciting journey together. From the do's and don'ts of the writing world to the hidden gems of the literary scene, the Scribe Vibe with Janae is your ultimate guide to navigating the enchanting landscape of books and the written word. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and enlightened as we explore the boundless possibilities of storytelling. Without further ado, let's dive in and discover the incredible world of writing together. Welcome to the show. And we're back to the segment of the episode called Writer's Talk. And with me today is the lovely Robin Michaels. And we're talking about her book, The Pleasure Seekers, a story about Ivan Dale.
You can't even see it. Okay.
Ivan Dale?
I beg your pardon? Dale Singh.
Dale. It's a story about Dale, the protagonist, and his struggles with love and acceptance. Hello, Robin. How are you?
I'm pretty good. All things considered. We're probably going to have a woman president if we play our cards right.
We might. Okay. Tell us a little bit about The Pleasure Seekers.
Okay. This book, my elevator pitch is a Sikh guy, and Sikh is his religion, with Asperger's, that he's the son of parents who were trafficked from India to Africa after World War II. He becomes an accidental rock star and an inventor, and he tries to shield his children from Christian ethos. And some people say, well, what's wrong with that? The big difference between Christianity and a lot of religions is that if you harm somebody, well, the first thing is we believe in one God. We don't believe that God has disciples or a child, because at least in Judaism and Sikh, we believe we're all God's children. But the other thing is, you can't do wrong and then ask Jesus to forgive you and go to heaven, because we don't know what happens to you when you die. When you die, you're dead. So he wants his children to make good choices and ethical decisions and not say, well, I can be a jerk or a bully or do dishonest things, but I'll ask Jesus to forgive me. and then I'll go to heaven and everything's okay. And that's actually a fundamental difference, you know, between Christians and, I want to say, the rest of us. And I wanted to address that in a book. And the other thing about him is he's fascinated by machines, like a lot of kids are, and he's offered a piano to sell. And he's just fascinated by all the wires, you know, and the keys and everything. So he's hustling and he finds a way to buy the piano. And his mother says, what are you doing with a piano? They're in Africa, of course. It's like, you're going to school. And he's following his brothers to school in Singapore. And he said, well, I'll come back. Don't you want me to come back and play the piano for you? And she says, well, you know, you got to practice this and you got to find somebody to teach you. And he finds a Peace Corps volunteer to teach him. And just becomes enthralled with being able to make music. Then when he starts his education in Singapore, you know, what I say in the book is he suffers future shock because Singapore, even back in the late 60s and early 70s, was much more developed than Africa. And he had to learn to cross the street. He had to learn to, you know, you just can't buy all sorts of junk to eat. I don't know if you've ever been to Singapore, but you can buy everything. But he learned keyboards. He started learning about programming. And a professor that he has there, he's a high school student, says, you'll have more opportunities if you go to Switzerland. And part of the reason that the professor wants him to go to Switzerland, he realizes this kid's a genius and he wants him to teach calculus. And that's what he does. He starts teaching calculus, but he also has a scholarship, and he still wants to play the piano. So in order to play the piano, he's actually got to take music courses. And in order to take music courses in college, you have to audition. So he's practicing the piano, and some other students hear him practicing and just start listening. And as he's leaving the studio, he practically falls over them, and they become friends. And they start jamming together, and what they send a tape of themselves, or his friend sends a tape of them to a music contest like Eurovision, and they win the contest, and suddenly he's a rock star. But he's never planned on being a rock star. He always planned on, you know, getting his education and thinking ultimately he'd be an engineer. And actually, that's what he turns out being, a sound engineer. And if you wonder how do people come to this, it's like one thing leads to another. You get an opportunity, you try it, you make progress, and that's what happens. But also, while he's still a teenager, he falls in love with the granddaughter of the man who bought his father. And the man who bought his father was a Jewish guy from Germany. And there's a lot of Germans still in East Africa. And because he's Jewish, after 7 years, according to the Old Testament, you have to release your slaves. But, you know, not all slaves are in chains. He just, you know, he was sort of indentured to the grandfather, and the grandfather taught him about his business. And along the way, his grandfather learned Kiswahili, of course, and English, and sent their sons to school because they lived in Arusha, which was a town at the time. It was a small town then. It's a huge place now. And the grandfather's son started out in Israel, didn't like what was going on there, went to the United States, but still came back every year to work with his grandfather. And then the father, Dale's father, and brought his daughters. And he falls in love with the oldest daughter, and he seduces her, and they have a great time. But she says, look, you know, your parents are not going to permit, he wants to get married. Your parents aren't going to permit this. You've got to stay in school as long as somebody's paying your way. And once you turn 18, we'll discuss this. But she sort of avoids him because she didn't want to cause problems for him or his family. And she knew that his parents wanted him to marry a sick woman. And his father meets a man who's on safari in Arusha. And he says, I have a young daughter and I'm looking to get her married off. And he meets her and they get married. But she's a totally different social class. And the irony is, in Sikh, it's very egalitarian. Everybody, it's like sociology in any kind of community. What we say we are and how we really are. And the Sikh people believe we're all equal. Men and women are equal. And that's one thing I really like about the Sikh religion, is that women and men are equal in Sikh. But she's very upper class and very material oriented. And things just go on and on. And he realizes that when he gets his PhD, he's got to make a decision. Because one thing is, she wants to move back to Dubai. She came from Dubai. I don't know if you've ever been to Dubai, but Dubai is a city out of science fiction. It's amazing. It's just, but you never see anybody on the street in Dubai. Whereas in Arusha and most of Africa, you see people, you know, all the time. You stop and talk to people all the time. And that is not, and he doesn't want his children raised in an elite atmosphere. He wants his children raised in a multiracial, multiethnic environment. And he's offered a job in the United States, and he takes that job and he gets together with this woman and they live happily ever after.
You need to write The Pleasure Seekers.
Oh, this is a very interesting. I was looking for a way to do this, but about 40 years ago, I was volunteering in Kenya at a girls' school. It just worked out that way. I was thinking of joining Peace Corps, which I ultimately did. But I joined this group. I was placed at this girls' school, and we were making bricks. Because what do Americans know how to do? We don't know how to do anything. And we were told if a teacher asked us to teach a lesson, we should stop making bricks and teach the lesson. And first week I was there, a teacher approached me, and I was one of the oldest in the group. Most of the group were college students. I was in my late 20s at the time. And I said, well, what's your lesson? And she said, it's how I know Jesus Christ is with me every day in my life. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't teach this. And she said, well, why not? And I said, well, I'm a Jew. And she said, don't you believe in Jesus? And I said, well, we don't doubt he existed. We're sure he existed. It's just that we believe we're all God's children. And then she asked, well, what is it that you believe? And I had to think, because I was raised pretty secular. And I said, well, you know, we don't really have a concept of hell. And another Jewish girl was in the group. She said, well, you know, we don't really believe in heaven either. And if you read the Old Testament, there's no talk of heaven and hell until you get to the very end. It's like, we don't know what happens to us. That's not really the point of the Old Testament. And she said, well, what happens to you when you die? And we said, you're dead. And that sort of shocked all the teachers. And she said, well, what caused you to be good? And I said, I guess integrity, responsibility to your community. Well, the word spread, we were in Kajiado in southern Kenya, that there were Jews in town. And not only were we the first white people they ever met who weren't missionaries, we were the first white people they ever met who they had seen do physical labor. So it's like, oh my gosh. But we got to be very popular because we weren't proselytizing. And I said, we all told them, we're not here to change how you live. You know, how you do things is your business. We came to learn about you and we had the time. And so, you know, if we could help you and do what you need done, why not? And learn about you and, you know, get to be friendly. And that's really started me thinking, because I live in Chicago, and Chicago is very cosmopolitan. If there's a group that exists on Earth, there is an enclave of them in Chicago. And so you don't even think about being Jewish or Muslim or even Hindu or whatever, although there's hardly any sick people at all. I mean, even Jews are like 0.001% of the population or something like that. Wow. But you go to rural areas and they've never met a Jew. And remember, they've never met a Jew. They've never met a Muslim. They've never met a Hindu. They've never met a Sikh for sure. I mean, they're a very small minority too. And so you see what's happening now in our country. You know, Trump, I mean, he gave a speech. This is a Christian country. Well, does that mean the rest of us don't belong here, or we should be subjugated by how they decide we should live? And I think people believe that Christians believe that people who aren't Christians, that we don't have any morals or we don't have any values at all, and we're pagans and heathens and we're going to corrupt people. And that's not it. We tend to be very ethical because it benefits our communities to be ethical. And, you know, to say, well, you know, I mean, the excuse is that the pseudo-Christians, you know, the right-wing Christians are making for what the GOP is doing and what Trump is doing, I find it appalling. But remember, they're a good portion of this country, and it's almost frightening to me. And you know, these people, they don't listen to the news. There's hardly any newspapers anymore. They listen to right-wing radio. They get their information from YouTube and, you know, lists. And they believe that people who speak authoritatively know what they're talking about. And, you know, they're very influential. And we really, you know, I was taught to just say, I mean, you don't fight with people. That's how Jews are. It's like, or we were, at least in the U.S., you know, it's like they believe what they believe. Don't let it bother you. But now we're in a crisis because they are exerting control over us. And not just control. They're demonizing the rest of us. And, you know, we're not the problem. So.
Okay.
That's it.
They have the complex character with a rich cultural background. How did you develop his character?
Partly I'm on the spectrum, in case you couldn't tell. And so I sort of know how we look at things. But when I was working in Africa, I met sick people. And they're a minority wherever they go, but how they talked about their space in the world and what their responsibilities were to their community. And one big thing is amongst the Sikh community is always giving back to the community and helping wherever you can. I thought that was really very important. And also from all the guys that I ever knew, including my ex-husband, how guys think, like, just about sex and relating to women. And also from traveling and having experiences where, you know, people have never met a Jew before, you just feel like a Martian. And I sort of gave him that outlook that, you know, he wasn't fitting, but he just had to just not let it bother him. And that, so, you know, very complex. It took several years to do this. And plus the research about human trafficking. I don't know how many people know this, but I mean, even after the British basically made slave trade illegal to the Western Hemisphere, it still went on and it still goes on. And I think people think, well, there's no slavery anymore. There's a lot of slavery. Just because people are in chains doesn't mean they're not enslaved. If they have no choice, if they can't get help, they're enslaved. And that's a lot of actually service workers too. And there's a woman named Bali Kaur Jaswal. She's also Sikh. She lives in Singapore. She published a book, I think a couple years ago, called Now They See Us, about how the Singaporeans hire so many Malaysian and Filipino women to be home workers. And this is true in Dubai as well, is that you work for an agency. And if you get fired, if the agency doesn't find you a new position, you go back to where you came from. And all those, they're mostly women, but there's men that do physical labor too. They repatriate the money they make to where they came from. And this is an ongoing thing where, you know, in a lot of countries, women don't have access to family planning. They have more kids than they can support. Their husbands are deadbeats or their partners are deadbeats. But, you know, Jesus are going to forgive them, blah, blah, blah. But they still got it. The women are supporting their families. And so they leave and then they become servants in other places. But they are essentially enslaved. They usually don't have any freedom of movement. So I wanted to get that out there, too. Yeah.
What challenges does Dale face being on the autism spectrum, and how does it affect his journey?
Well, you know, he doesn't realize that, you know, his thinking is different, but because he's got friends and they're musicians and they have that in common, he's got a small core of people who he's comfortable with and who he trusts. But he spends most of his time actually working, and he invents. I have him inventing something that I don't think exists right now. I call it Magic Score. It's a sound notation system. And so what you have to do is you hook up your computer to whatever musical instrument you're playing, and it will record the notes you play. And so I had to do a lot of research on that, how to do the coding to make it physically show up. And that take a lot of time because I'm in my 70s. I went to college in the late 1980s. I was over 30 when I went to college. That was just the beginning of the computer age. And the things that we had to learn about computers back then, and I don't know if you remember, is that there was really, the internet was just starting out in the early 1990s, and you had to hook up your modem to your phone line, and you'd send a message, and then you'd immediately unhook it, or you'd be being charged by the minute, like CompuServe. I don't know if you remember that kind of thing. Yes. So he's got to look for more memory for his computer. He's got to look for oscilloscopes. He's got to look for all this kind of stuff. And of course, nobody understands what he's doing, but I don't know if you know any engineers. I live with an engineer. I've lived with an engineer for over 20 years. It's like living with the Big Bang Theory. You remember the Big Bang Theory?
Yes.
The TV show. And actually, I worked with a woman who's she had two sons who were engineers. So when I said that, she knew exactly what I was talking about. They just think they think differently. You know, I think they're all on the spectrum, you know, and you just sort of have to like just get used to it.
What inspired the invention of Magiscore in the story? What does it symbolize?
Well, that took a long time, too. I don't think it symbolizes too much. It's just that he stuck to it, and that's what engineers do. That one of his bandmates are asked to score Barcelona, the Freddie Mercury symphony for their school orchestra. I don't know how many people know that Freddie Mercury, he was a serious musician, and he was very interested in classical music. And he met, Montserrat Caballé, who is a Barcelonian opera singer, and they got together. So, actually, he'd given an interview, and somebody said, "What are you listening to now?" And he said, "Montserrat Caballé." He just loved her voice. He had heard her sing with Pavarotti. Well, her brother heard the interview and said, "This guy wants to meet you. That would be sort of interesting." So he flies to Barcelona, and they meet, and they're together for 6 hours. And she asked him to write some music for her hometown, which is Barcelona. And he does. And this is right at the time where he starts dying of AIDS. And it's been performed a couple times, but it's not really classical opera, although there are words to the music. But the music is just incredible. So he says, you know, Dale's friend, Adam, says, you know, it'd be great if you could invent a computer program that we could just play the music and put it, you know, it'll score in the computer. And he says, "I can do that." Not realizing that it's going to take years to perfect it. Because I don't know if the early computers, when we started working on early computers, the software was sort of iffy. And you would get, the computer would freeze, you know, the screen would freeze, and you'd get either an hourglass or something would show up, say, "Please wait." Well, back at the time he's doing this, there was no hourglass or "Please wait." It would just freeze up, and he knew he had to either look for more memory or he had to do more coding. And so it did take a real long time to do this. But I thought, oh, this would be very interesting to do. And so that's why I had him doing this. And I was watching 60 Minutes on CBS a few months ago, and some guy was working on something similar to that. I should have taken notes, but I was just so like awestruck that this guy was working on it. And the problem that he said, which is the problem that I put in the book, is that the computer could understand certain tones because of hertz. And that's how that is. But different musical instruments give off at different hertz and different sound waves. And so he has to address that. And then also, the computer could understand one note. But when it came to chords, you know, the computer got confused. So he had to work on that to make it fast enough to display, but also so it could understand the chords and then write the chords. And you can imagine that takes a long time too.
Right.
You know, so I just thought it would be, you know, it'd make that's what really makes the story, is that he's working on this so long. He's in school so long. He's married. He's got a couple kids. His wife, he always feels his wife is not really forthcoming. She's very secretive, but he knows that she's very, material oriented, and this goes on and on and on. And actually, they have issues over birth control too, and he gets a vasectomy, which is very unusual, but you know, people don't talk about that. And towards the end of the book, she says, well, I'll come with you to the United States, but I want you to reverse your vasectomy and have another child, or I want to live in Dubai. And he said, that's not going to happen. And the reason he doesn't want to have more than two kids is he's got to support his parents also in Africa. And he feels it's very important to give back. And he knows that there's so much to be done in Africa. And to me, too, it's like I was a Peace Corps volunteer 30 years ago, and I was back. Well, I was back 7 years ago to the community I served in. And things have gotten worse in terms of environmental degradation. And then COVID happened, and because of the environmental degradation, they've had a lot of floods. And it's like, I don't know that there's a solution to the problem of population density, particularly in Africa. But we're facing that here, too. And, you know, there's some people who believe that that's not true. And it's just a scare tactic that the climate is not changing. And that, or that humans don't have an effect on the climate. And I know, I just even know from where I live, you know, how much the climate has changed in just the past several years, to tell you the truth. You know?
So this character is intriguing. How did you develop her story, and how did you tackle the love triangle?
Well, basically, you know, she went back to the United States. The woman he's in love with, and also when they're having their first affair, he says, he's like 16 years old, he says, I love you, and she says, look, we gotta talk. You know, you can't be thinking every time you have sex with a woman that you love her. You gotta rein yourself in. And she says, for your own mental health, you have to get yourself, you know, under control here, because you've got a life ahead of you, and this is not going to happen right now. And she's barely in touch with him, but he stays in touch with her younger sister, who he sort of also had a relationship with, but more friends with benefits. He's in love with the older sister, but she's the one who stays in touch. Meanwhile, he knows his wife. You know, he's taken from, she was raised in a convent, which complicated things. And he takes her out of Dubai and into Europe, where there are no sick people. She speaks French, but she's never been really away from home. And she felt that the church gave her comfort. And that's, I think a lot of people don't realize that. People of other religions very often send their children to Catholic schools because, in their minds, the Catholic schools provide a better quality education than a lot of public schools. It just depends on where you are. And that's why her parents wanted her to be able to speak English and so sent her to a convent school. But, you know, then she started believing in Jesus and having that kind of faith, you know, and faith is the evidence of things not seen. And concentrating on that. But she ultimately gets a job in a jewelry store, and she's making money, but he's supporting them. He's actually supporting his family on what he's making as a teaching assistant. He's like, all the money he makes from his rock star stuff, that goes in an account that gets invested. But to him, that's not real money, because you really can't count on that. You know, you could be a rock star one day and they'll forget you the next day. So towards the end of the book, she leaves because she wants to go back to Dubai, and he says, that's not going to happen. I'm not going back to Dubai. I want my children raised in a racially diverse environment. And he goes to her job to get her tax forms. And usually in Switzerland, they just take care of everything. You never see anything unless you ask for it. So he goes to her job at the jewelry store and gets her tax forms and finds out she's been making much more money than he has, yet she's always arguing about money. And you know how some people are. I mean, that's something I use. Some people just find something to argue about just to argue. Some people just, they're not happy unless there's conflict in their lives. My own father was like that. He never, no matter what happened, something was aggravating him. And to get over that as a kid, that's really, really tough. And so, you know, he finally realizes he can't do anything. This has got to end. It's not working for anybody. And actually, like, I'm working on a next book, but that's a whole other story about publishing a book. She goes back to Dubai. She opens a store in Dubai. She gets married to a Christian guy. She has a kid. But let me tell you something. Since I approached a lot of agents. And of course, I mean, this story is just too controversial for agents. And so I probably approached 50 agents. I could have continued doing it. I had previously published an erotic romance and just to see what it was like. And I used a Vanity Press, Newman Springs. They did a lot of work, but they promised more marketing than they actually delivered. And that's really the biggest problem, is getting people to read your book and getting your book out there. So I'm working on short stories, but getting back to, you know, how this, where did I see this going? These days, agents want you to bang out books. You know, like James Patterson, he probably has a new book once a month. Now, of course, he's not writing all his own books. He's got all these people that he works with, that he writes with, and he sort of edits before he sends to his agent, but they bang out books. I'm not that kind of writer to bang out a book. And there's a lot of writers you've probably read that they publish every 3 or 4 years, maybe go longer between books. But agents want you to have books that can go out, bang, 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 go out that way. Also, my sister knows a group of LGBTQ science fiction and fantasy writers, and they self-publish. But those are the kind of writers that they bang them out. And so they have a following. So they develop a list, and they have a following, and whenever they publish a book, they've got that book, you know, sold. The other thing that's really changed in the past several years is now more people are buying ebooks. And that's, I mean, so my ebook sales are doing really well. I don't know how many actual physical copies of my paperback book I've sold, but I'm getting royalties off the ebook, but I keep marketing the book. I use, they call them virtual book tours, where you'll get people to do you a reel and you post on Instagram and BookTok and Facebook. But in order for your book to move up the algorithm to be featured on Amazon, and there's no way around it, you need reviews. And you need at least 20 reviews to move up the algorithm to get featured. And I only got right now, I think, 7 or 8 reviews. And that's the thing, is that I'm waiting for 3 people who told me they review my book and they haven't posted a review. I paid for NetGalley. NetGalley, when you see books reviewed in like People magazine or Oprah magazine or, you know, any of the magazines where they'll review 2 or 3 books, the reviewers have got those books off of NetGalley. I paid a lot of money in NetGalley. I got over 20 downloads and I only got 2 reviews off of NetGalley. Well, that's so, I mean, and I'm on Facebook with a bunch of other writers. You know, I've written a book. Well, woohoo, anybody can write a book, believe me. But it's getting it sold, and marketing it is daunting. It's just daunting. So I appreciate you interviewing me, but I'm telling you, read my book. And even if you leave a 1-star review and say it's crappy, I thought it was horrible, it counts. We need those reviews.
What's your writing process for The Pleasure Seekers?
Well, it's sort of like, I want to say it's like doing a painting. You come up with like a sketch and you get some details in there. And then you start layering it and layering it. Now, there's some people, they'll write every day. I keep a pad of paper around. I'm really old fashioned. I'll just write on paper. But, and then I'll key it into the computer. But it's like doing research and saying, that's interesting. In fact, I was watching a TV show where they're talking about Swiss enameled jewelry. And I don't know if they still make it, but they make these little copper enameled flowers and birds that go on like charm bracelets, and people collect them and they cost a fortune. And I have Dale going into the jewelry store one day waiting for Sita, his wife, and he's looking at these things. And they charge, you know, several hundred dollars for a little teeny weeny little charm. And he said, you know, I look at this and I understand, you know, the workmanship and the craft, but I come from a place where a man's most precious possession is a hole, you know? And, you know, and his wife is like hauling water from a river somewhere because they don't have a well. And these people have enough money to collect tchotchkes, you know? Remember the whole Beanie Baby things. We Americans, we're insane, you know? And so, I mean, you read about these kind of things and you think, you know, what would my characters do? And that's sort of how I go about writing.
Right. you approach character development, particularly for a character as multifaceted as Dale?
You know, there's exercises you can do is like, that say, who are his friends? Who are his family? You know, what are his influences? How does he feel about, you know, death or love or having a pet or food or those kind of things? There's all sorts of things you can, exercises you can do to develop a character. And I'm pretty detail oriented. For years, I groomed dogs. And make a dog look good, you have to look beyond what you're the cute little thing and look at its structure and figure out a way to make the hair make the dog look better but natural. And so when it comes to writing too, it's sort of like you take a whole bunch of different things into account, and I think you have to have a sort of a feel for it. Now this is the thing too, I read a lot of books that you think, did he need this many words to say that? And I wondered, well, actually, you know, writers tend to write too many words because it's hard to edit yourself. But we write, and then you think, what my method is, okay, I wrote it, and then I'll leave it sit for a few days, and then I'll reread it and say, well, does this make sense? Or should I change this around? Does this go here? In editing, I should say this before I say that, that kind of thing. And that's really what I do.
Okay. What influenced your decision to include a protagonist on the autism spectrum?
So, just being on the spectrum myself. And I didn't realize that, I don't know if anybody knows who Temple Grandin is. She's an animal physiologist, and she wrote a book called Thinking in Pictures. And she's written several books, and she's a fantastic writer, but she also has a lot of insight into how animals think. And when I was actually in graduate school, I was really depressed. Although one thing I learned from being really depressed was that for women, a lot of times it's very much hormone-based. And I realized when I was younger, when I was about to get my period, I would feel like a curtain would come down before me, and it would suddenly be hard to breathe. And it was the physical sensation of depression. But knowing that, I was able to work through and say, this too will pass. I was not depressed about anything. It was a neurological brain reaction. And I think that's what we know now more about mental illness, too. And I've been writing about my brother, who's also on the spectrum and is profoundly mentally ill, although he seems to be happy being a jerk. But what can you say? You know? And but he doesn't have any insight into himself. And because I have the insight, you know, I realize, and you got to tell people, mental illness is not a moral failing. It's a neurological disorder. And, you know, there are some talk therapies that'll help you cope, but a lot of times it's taking drugs and brain chemicals that'll straighten you out. And what some people do is they just become immersed in their work. And that's how engineers are. They're not really terribly introspective. They just, you know, have a project and they work on that project. And they're not, in fact, I went out with my roommate once. We went out to dinner, and he's so funny. We went out and he said, you know, when I used to go out with my friends, this is back in Japan, we'd all go out and we'd all have something to read. And we didn't talk to each other, and we'd have dinner together, but we didn't talk to each other. You know, and the idea of, and that's why this guy's single, because he doesn't know how to talk to a woman. And that's how just some, you know, I love watching reruns of The Big Bang Theory. Sheldon Cooper is like, you can tell this guy doesn't relate to anybody at all. You know, he's in his own little world. And I think it's, you know, that's how some of us are. I mean, I'm a dog person. I'm a member of 4 dog clubs. I go to dog training every week, and that's my social life, is going to dog training with the dogs. And we're all dog people. We all love our dogs, and all our dogs are well-behaved because we're going to dog training, and that's just fine. I'm not the type of person to go to a party and drink and smooze. And that's the other thing, too, is that we're not really drinkers. We've had other things to focus on.
Okay. What Can you discuss any significant changes or revisions you made during the writing process?
Yeah, you know, writers write in different ways, and I met about some writers that they'll make an outline of their book. And of course, if you're writing a lot of books and you're banging them out, you really do need an outline. But I've also talked to other writers who write organically. They just start writing and it just comes out and the story sort of tells itself. But you know, it's great if you have an editor to work with who can point that kind of stuff out to you. It's like, you said this, you said she was wearing red, and then, you know, a few paragraphs later, she's wearing green. And so you sort of learn to catch that kind of thing, you know. But, I mean, that's basically it, is learning more word crafting. Yeah, I think it'd be more helpful if I was more into poetry. I think poets are really the best fiction writers too. But then it's like, I've read books, like I said, where they've used how many words to say this? Do they really need this many words to say this? You feel like skipping over. I don't know if you've ever read Haruki Murakami. He's a Japanese writer. The last book I read was The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle, where this guy's wife leaves him. And for over 500 pages, this guy's sitting in a hole somewhere, and then he works for some woman that he met on the street, and then she's knows somebody who was in one of the, I guess, the Sino-Japanese War, and he goes off on all these tangents, and then it's like, what did any of this have to do with the story? Now, some people like writing like that. To me, it's like, where are we going here? You know? So I don't want to write like that. I want to tell a straightforward story, and I try not to, you know, go off on too many tangents.
Right. Okay, what are you working on now?
I'm just mostly short stories. I've had several short stories published in the past year, but you just got to keep sending them out. And as literary journals are looking for stories, you keep sending them out. I would like to work on a nonfiction book about dog hair, but now actually, partly due to Instagram, there's some really good videos that groomers are putting out, and I think maybe that might be more helpful to people who are pet owners than writing a book about actually doing what you need to do, because they'll show how they handle the dogs and what tools they use, and I think that's extremely helpful. So, I mean, I'm doing some of that, but mostly short stories.
Where can people find you?
Oh, okay. I'm on Facebook at RobinMichaels9. And also, I blog at disparateinterests.wordpress.com. I blog usually about once a week, just as a writing exercise, but just about everything. I started out writing about dogs a long time ago. I refused to work for a guy who had no dog experience, but he inherited some money and he wanted to open a dog business. And that's a problem these days, that everybody loves dogs. They don't know anything about animal physiology or animal psychology. They've never trained a dog. They've never brushed a dog. They just want to have a dog business and have dog daycare and dogs running around all over the place, which I feel is pretty dangerous. Anyways, I told him I couldn't work for him because he didn't have enough dog experience. And he started posting on Yelp and on Craigslist that I beat dogs. And he saw me. Yeah, you could write. Well, you know something? It's a free country. You can be the worst asshole in the world and get away with it. And he ultimately went out of business. But I thought, this is horrible. Yet I survived. But another friend said, you should really blog about him. And I started blogging about him. But I thought, well, there's all these things that interest me, especially about dogs, and people don't know. And I started writing about that. And then just other things that just come up that you know, experience in life. And one thing is getting catfished online on online dating sites. Now, usually you can tell if somebody's a scammer within a few minutes if you're looking, but some women just ignore the signals that this guy is not real, you know? Right. And you know, so the guy says, well, I'm a Christian, and they send him money. And a lot of these guys, you see them on Facebook all the time, but they're on all the dating sites. They're on a oil rig somewhere, or they're in the army in Iraq, you know, and they're lonely and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, and they start asking for money. It's like, if you're from the army, you got money. And if you're on an oil rig, you're making money. And if you're on an oil rig, what do you need money? You're on an oil rig. How? But I said, I've heard a few times about that. It was like, why do you think this person is real? But you know something? We have a big problem now in the United States. People believe the stuff that's not real. Like when people like get killed in the island of Chicago, what can you say? And you know how it is all over. I mean, the police shoot you because they got guns, you know? It's horrible. And so what people do is they have memorials and they let off balloons. And they think those balloons go to heaven. And they don't. They land in fields and animals eat them and choke. But, you know, people don't want to believe that. They want to really believe the balloons went to heaven. Now, have you been in an airplane? Are you seeing thousands of balloons? And actually, I have Dale say that to, he's talking to his kids at near the end of the book. And he said, you've been in an airplane. Do you see anybody up there? I mean, we've been up to heaven. Do you, and, you know, and the kids say, well, Mom says it's just your souls. It's like, we don't know what happens, but in any case, it's like, let's be realistic here about how the world works, you know?
Right.
So.
Right. Okay, that is all the time we have for Writer's Talk. I want to thank Robin for coming on to the show and talking about her book, The Pleasure Seekers.
Yeah, let's see if we can get this. Do we have...
There we go.
Does it get? Is it? I don't know if it's any clearer.
It's going to clear up. It's going to clear
okay.
up.
All right.
And
you know, you could. It's an ebook. It's only like $2.99.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's on Kobo. It's on Barnes and Noble online. It's on Apple Books. You know, there's all these different.
I forgot to ask you that.
Yeah, it's all over. It's on Amazon. It's on Kindle. But any place you can get an ebook, you know, it's there. And please. Leave a review.
Okay. Remember, people, writing is a journey, not a race. I will see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Janae.
And with that, we've reached another episode ending. I want to thank my guests for joining me on today. And I want to thank my audience for listening to The Scribe Vibe with Janae. I hope you've gained some invaluable insights and feel inspired to continue your own writing journey. Remember, every episode is packed with tips, tricks, and real life experiences to help you navigate the writing world and publishing. If you've enjoyed our time together, I'd be thrilled if you take a moment to subscribe to the podcast and my YouTube channel, Janae Writes Books. Leave a comment, rating, like, or a review. Your support means the absolute most to me and helps me continue to bring you the content you love. Plus, it allows me to reach even more aspiring writers and book enthusiasts like yourself. For a wealth of additional resources, including writing prompts, book recommendations, and exclusive content, be sure to visit me at my website, www.JanaeWritesBooks.com. It's your one-stop shop for all things writing and publishing. And hey, if you're an author with a story to tell, I want to hear from you. I'm always on the lookout for incredible guests to feature on the show, whether you're a seasoned pro or a debut author, traditionally published or self-published. If you've got a book you're eager to promote, drop me a line at Janae C. That's JANAEC as in cat at JanaeWritesBooks.com with guests in the subject line. Share a bit about your book, your publication journey, and your launch date, and I'll be in touch to discuss the possibility of having you on the show. Remember, the video portion of this episode will air on my channel on YouTube the day after the podcast episode airs on Spotify or wherever you listen to this. That is Janae Writes Books, found on YouTube. Thank you again for being a part of the Scribe Vibe with Janae community. Until next time, keep reading, keep writing, and never stop chasing your literary dreams.